Hello again, welcome to Practical Mathematics, and this is Jim Oswald again, trying to share what little what I have with you. Today, as you can tell, subscripted variables, summation notation, product notation, and banks is where we get practical. So let's start with subscripted variables. You've got a cluster of things. They're all pretty much the same stuff, and you've got several of them, okay? So you can use a subscripted variable to indicate some specific entry in this list of things that are of a similar nature. So you might have, you might have measured the heights of all of the members of your class. Or you've been out fishing, you've caught a lot of fish, and you've got the weights of all the fish you caught. Or, you know, you've been taking notes over the last month, and you know how long you've waited in lines during that last month. You have all of these observations of that. And you can specify a specific entry in that list by a subscript. You've got this list of some number of things, and this many down the list is the one I want. So you can do that with them. Another thing you can do with subscripted variables, and that I do a lot, is to indicate some specific thing derived from a list of similar things. Maybe their average, maybe the largest value, maybe the smallest value. A lot of things you could do, calculations you make off of it. They're all there. I've used them all. And that subscripts can do that as well. Okay? These things are used in formulas, some sorts of calculations. You may find them in some of the readings we're doing, which is why I'm looking at it here. But it's also just useful in a lot of other areas in mathematics. I happen to be a great fan of statistics, and we use subscripted variables all over the place in statistics. So useful. Also, when you start looking at summation or product notation, this is something you just have to use. So let's look at what subscripted variables look like. Okay, let's get some examples of it. X sub I. So whatever X is, however many there are, you've got them in order, some order, and this is number I in that list, whatever I is. You will notice that this is a variable. Okay, that we usually call that an index. You can use variables as the index or subscript on a subscripted variable. Temp 4. So I've got a bunch of measured temperatures. This is the fourth on the list. Maybe the fourth one I've observed, or at least the fourth one I've recorded. A couple of different ways you could take that. T max. Okay, I don't know what T is, but this max, that's what I put in the bottom when it's the maximum value of T, which is usually when I'm using it. I'll use that for temperatures. You can use it for anything you want. You can use it for time, throughput, anything. But this is the biggest one that I've observed in that set. Y average. Whatever Y is, YF, that would be how I would notate for Y's average. Add them up, divide by the number, you've got your average. That's what you know. So you can do that. V minimum. Who knows what V is? I mean, velocity, volume, variance, variability, I don't know. But this is the little subscript I use to say it's the smallest one in the observed set. Now, I've been doing this for long enough. I've just got a number of little subscripts like max, av, min, whatever. I always use them to mean the same thing. I know what they mean. And I, when I'm working with variables, I'll write down, okay, this is, t is whatever it is, y is whatever it is. And then if it's something other than familiar things like max, min, average, whatever, I'll specify what that variable is just to keep myself from getting confused. So those are examples of subscripted variables, and as I say, I find them a very useful tool to use. Let's get on to the next slide and look at summation notation. You get this thing all in a huge block because for some reason these little formulas here just wouldn't cooperate and animate. But summation notation is used frequently in formulas. Okay? Financial formulas, mathematical formulas, statistical formulas, all kinds of formulas. When you're adding up a whole bunch of things, where you've got observations or measurements or whatever, and you want to do the same thing with all of them and add them all up, this is the notation you'd use to do it compactly. And when you're doing this, the subscript down here, here's our little subscript right there, x sub i, we generally call that the index or the running index of the variable. It's just what we call it. They're going to look like this. Now, if you've taken Greek, or if you know a little Greek for whatever reason, this is just a capital sigma, which is the Greek letter for S. S, summation. Okay, that's a good way to remember it, as long as you know what it is. You'll see down here, I equals 1. So we start with the first observation. 25, that's the number of observations I'm adding up. Okay, that means add it up like this. Now, which of these two is more compact? This one. And I've had, you know, things that I was adding up where I had 100 or more variables. Obviously, I did that on my computer rather than by hand. But 100 or more variables, sometimes 1,000 or more variables. Can you imagine writing this down for like 100 or 1,000 variables as opposed to this? Definitely easier. Now, sometimes you'll see it written like this. Instead of starting at 1 below the sigma and all the way up to the upper limit, 25 above the sigma, you'll write it like this. I've done it both ways. I do it both ways. It's not a problem to me. But both of these mean the same thing. And, you know, add up the square of the reciprocal of x squared, sub 2, x squared, sub 3, all of these things, add them up. Okay? So that's adding. Obviously, I mentioned product notation. Let's look at that. Here we are. And it acts just like the summation notation to a point. You know, instead of adding all of the entries of the formula specified, you're multiplying them all. Okay, now this, if you've got any familiarity with Greek, this symbol right here is a Greek letter for pi. The Greeks actually call it P for product. Another memory device. Sigma S for sum. Capital pi, P, product. It's great. And again, you can go from I equals 1 to, and I slipped in N here on you. Formulas like this, the product notation could be a variable up here. You can have variables in both places that the running index goes between. So here's your index. Multiply all the xi together. Again, it can be written I equals 1 to 25 or I equals 1 to n or a to b or whatever. And again, they all mean multiply all of these things together. This is another thing that we use a lot. It's just one of those little things. Now, the sum and product notations can be used in much more complicated formulas, okay? So here's one that I've used more than once in my life, the variance. If you remember anything from statistics, the standard deviation is roughly the square root of the variance. And here's your formula for it. X sub I minus X, and that's the average for X, and square it, and do all these weird things. And then divide it by n minus 1, and you have your variance. You want your standard deviation? Take the square root of it. Or here's a fun-looking formula. If that doesn't cross your eyes, you're not paying attention, or else you're very used to math. And n goes from 1 to infinity. It goes on forever. That does happen with formulas using summation or product notation. And this formula right here actually converges to pi over 2. I don't know how they figured it out, but they did. But you can, it's amazing how complicated these formulas can get. And it's just a notational thing, but it's a useful notational thing, and you may find use for it as we get later in the course. So much for the math. Let's take a more practical attack here and look at banks and bankings. So here are several reasons why you might want to use a bank or a credit union. We'll tell you the difference of that in a bit, okay? First of all, you can set it up to automatically pay bills where you know what you're going to be paying every month. I mean, if you're going to be paying a certain number of dollars rent on the first of the month, every month, many banks and credit unions, if not all of them, will allow you to set it up to pay that bill. Now, obviously, if you're going to do that, you'd better be very careful to make completely sure that you've got the money in there to do it. But, again, it's a convenient thing. It's hard to forget something that's set up and done automatically by a computer, okay? It keeps your cash safe. Okay, banks do fail. I get that. But anymore, in most countries, and the United States of America is one of those countries, there is insurance that is held by the bank that protects your cash. Hey, if you've got it stashed in a jar in your house and somebody steals the jar, you are totally out of luck. You are dead. There's no way you can get it back. The bank fails, if the bank's robbed, your cash is still safe. You might have a little trouble accessing it, but you'll ultimately be able to. You can get your wages. Now, what that basically means, a lot of banking institutions, a lot of credit union institutions will allow your employer to directly deposit whatever your net wages are straight into your banking account. My employer requires us to do that. I don't have a choice. But this is where you can get the money put into where you can access it simply and easily. You get statements. Okay, that's basically, and I'm sure you know this, a printed or electronic listing of all the money going in and all the money going out. And then you'll told at the end what's left as far as they know. Obviously, if they're preparing this and then sending it out in the mail like they do with the paper ones, or preparing it and sending it out in email or some other electronic format, there is a time lag. Checks may still be out that haven't been cashed. Debit card payments may still be out and not have made their way in. So they may not jive with your checking account, with your debit account, but you just have to know how to get in there and, well, make sure that they agree with each other. Debt-free living. Okay, what's the point? How do you do that with a bank or a credit union? My goodness. And the answer is, you put money aside, and we'll look at how to do this later, but you put money aside to handle what you expect to have happen. So, for instance, one financial authority that I'm at least have read something from recommends that one of the first things you need to do after you've paid your debts off is start putting money by so that if there's a catastrophe or a crisis, in this country we frequently see strikes, and that can cut your money supply off or at least greatly reduce it, put enough money by so that you can live for 3 months with no income. Now, my wife and I have chosen to be very frugal, and we've got enough. We could, with what we've got saved, easily live a year with absolutely no income. Do we want to do that? No. But if we had to, we could. You know, put money by for the insurance. You've got the little bit of money you have to pay out of what they pay. Put it by for that sort of thing, for the potential of your car getting damaged. You have to fix, you know, somebody slashes your tires or your engine goes to pieces, or, you know, you have to have a new alter. These things happen. Have money saved for emergencies. This helps you move towards debt-free living, which is kind of nice. Mobile banking. A lot of financial institutions, you can actually get onto your cell phone, wherever you're at, as long as you've got cell service, you can, using your passwords and all the other things you have to do to get into it, get right into your account, move money around, electronically pay bills, and you can do it from anywhere, a coffee shop, when you're sitting, you know, in traffic, waiting for the traffic to start moving, you can be paying bills, you can be checking your balance, you can be looking to see if that check you wrote the other day has been cashed. Something to consider. Now, you can sometimes receive benefits. They'll give you benefits like free cashier's checks, free money orders, so that you can send money somewhere or other, or you can take a large amount of money to pay for something, give it to the person that's receiving it, and get it for nothing. There are other benefits, but you can sometimes get benefits from the banks other than that. There are certain kinds of transactions that banks and credit unions need to do for you. Some banks and credit unions will handle investments portfolios. They'll handle you buying or selling shares of stocks or bonds, etc. And they'll do that for free if you are indeed banking with them. You can shop online. Okay, this is with your debit card that you're likely to get from your credit union or bank. Use it on the internet. Okay, there is some risk with that. But one of the benefits you might receive from your bank, from your credit union, might be them indemnifying you against fraudulent use of your debit or credit card. So you can shop online, which, as I am creating this lecture, we're in the middle of the COVID crisis. Large sections of the world are shutting down. People are not being allowed to be out, or if we do go out, we're very restricted in what we're fairly comfortable doing. But you can buy your groceries and have them delivered. Not a small thing. You can be safe from thieves. Again, a little bit hard to get into a bank. Kind of hard to get into the assets of a credit union. They can break into your house a lot more easily. And again, if you've got your money stashed, you know, you bury it in the backyard or you hide it under your mattress or whatever. There's a lot of things people have done. If it's stolen, you're out of luck. You're sunk. The bank, it's not the case. Now, there's some things to consider about picking a bank, okay? Some of them are more obvious, and some of them maybe not so much, okay? So, for instance, the location of the bank. Look, if you got to drive in an hour and a half through even regular traffic to get to the bank, that's like really inconvenient, okay? So you want a bank that's reasonably convenient to you, where you do your business, where you live, where you work, something like that, so that it's easy for you to do business. You want to look and see what their availability of automatic teller machines are. The little things where you put your card in and you can get a little bit of money or do transactions without using your cell phone. And the automatic tellers are, to be honest with you, rather more secure than doing it, sometimes at least, on your phone. So do they have them near places you tend to be? Is there one convenient to your home? Is there one convenient to your place of work or your business? Is there one convenient to the places where you shop? Think about that. Look at that. You know, save yourself some effort here. Bank hours. Oh, buddy. That's a significant one. If the bank's going to be open only when you're unable to get to it, it's not going to be worth much, especially if you have things that you have to do, paperwork or something that you have to do at the bank. You either have to take time off from work or whatever it is you're doing there during the day. You have to figure a way of getting there when they're open. So look at the bank hours. See if their hours include times that you would find it convenient to get to it, to do those things that can only be done in person. And there are some of those, as you know. Look at their customer service. Do they really do a good job taking care of you? Can you go in and get what you need? Are they willing to sit down with you, perhaps even without you making an appointment, and take care of whatever financial thing you want to do, handling investment issues, correcting an issue on your bank account, whatever? Is that available? What is it like? What are they going to do for you? And again, check into online banking. Not all banks have that. Not all credit unions will offer it. If it's something that's important to you, if you really want to be able to do a lot of functions online, check into, is it available? And by the way, is it going to cost you anything? So, services to consider. Look at all of this. Credit cards, lines of credit, loans, mortgages, mobile and online banking, automatic bill paying, international banking, savings accounts, particularly health, financial planning, investment management. Some banks and credit unions will offer insurance. They'll broker it for you. They'll help you set up retirement programs. Do you have to have all of this from every financial institution you work with? No. There's probably a lot of these you couldn't care less about anyway. Do you really want somebody helping you plan your finances? Maybe not. Do you really need to be able to do international banking activities? I don't. So, yeah, I know that my credit union that I work with can do that. Actually had to do it once. But that's not why I picked it. That had nothing to do with it. Lines of credit. If you're not planning to borrow anything, who cares what credit line they offer you? You know, are you in a position where you might need a personal loan? Okay, like to fix the house. Like to add some capacity to your business. You need to buy a new vehicle, or at least a new vehicle for you, even if somebody else has owned it. You might not have that much cash saved. It's nice if you do. It's a great goal to have. But you might need to borrow some money. What kind of cost is it going to look at you? Are they going to charge you huge interest rates? Are they going to be willing to give you a decent interest rate? Same song sung for mortgages. So look at all of these things. Figure out which ones are important to you. Write it down before you start hunting for a bank. And then when the time comes that you're going to either hunt for a new bank or hunt for your first bank, whichever it is, you know what's important to you. Ask them what they offer. Ask them what it costs to use it. Little advanced planning can save you a lot of grief later. Then there's the fees to consider. I've already alluded to that. But some banks charge you for every check you write. Now, a lot of banks now, particularly with business accounts, will allow you 100 or 300 checks a month. And then for the next check, you start getting charged a nominal fee. But again, that's something that's going to cost you something. If you think there's a possibility that you write more than their allowed number of checks, you better know what that's going to cost you and know that you're willing to pay it. Does it cost you to check your balances? At my credit union, it doesn't. In fact, credit unions generally do not have check fees and balance inquiry fees, which is why I like them. But what's it going to cost you to check your balance? And you know you will periodically want to do that to make sure that your checkbook balances, that your, you know, debit card account reflects reality. Those automatic tellers, is it going to cost you money to use those? If you're in an area where your credit union or bank doesn't have automatic tellers, what is it going to cost you if you use some other financial institution's automatic teller to tap into your account there? Are you going to get charged for that? And if so, how much? This can produce leakage of money that you don't see, and you can suddenly start running out of money and not knowing you're doing it because you didn't know that you were paying fees for the checks, for the balance inquiries, for the automatic tellers, okay? If you accidentally go and spend more than you have, banks will charge you for that. How bad is it? Is it $25? Is it $100? Is it 50 cents? If you know that there's a potential risk you're going to do that, you pretty much better know what it's going to look like. And you better be making plans to make sure you got the money to cover it. So, banks versus credit unions for our final slide. And there's some significant differences. A bank, generally it's one or a group of people that pool money to start doing it. In a credit union, these are basically things where people come together and create the business. Of course, they usually become independent of just the original members. But if you're in a credit union, you're a part owner of that, and you have a say in how it goes. Banks are trying to make a buck, and I don't blame them for that. Credit union is not for profit. They're not trying to make a buck. They're trying to provide a service, and they're obviously requiring employees and buildings to do it. So the particular credit union I'm in, which is a U.S. credit union, at the end of year, if they have made more than what they need, I'll receive a portion of it back because I'm one of their credit union members. That's a bonus. Now, some years it's not so great. Some years it's very good. But they're not there to make a profit. They're there to provide the service, and that has some advantages. Banks will often provide more services and will often have greater accessibility than credit unions. But credit unions will generally have lower costs for what services they provide. You won't pay as harsh an interest rate on the whole if you're a member of a credit union, if you borrow money from them. And if you're saving money with them, you'll get a higher return on the whole. Because again, banks are for profit. Credit unions are not for profit. This is not high tech. And it does have some really big nice things. Now, here in the United States, banks are insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. The U.S. government set this thing up, and the way it's set up, the money that I have in that bank is insured, and if the bank goes broke, the FDIC will return my money to me. It'll take a little while, I'm sure, but if the bank makes some bad decisions and it goes under, I'm not going to be hurt so badly. And that's very important. Credit unions have the same thing, the National Credit Union Administration. I'm not sure that that's a federal institution, but they have banded together to create this to protect the people who have entrusted them with their money. So, there's a safety factor with both of them. There's some convenience factors. There's just some good things that you can use a bank for. Conveniences, protection, being able to check things you need. Credit unions versus banks, they do a lot of similar things. And this is kind of the best way I know of deciding which one you're going to go with.